Welcome to the Center in the City podcast. I'm your host, Wade Brill, and during this series, I'll be interviewing various thought leaders, wellness experts, and humans on how they practice sustainable self-care and mindfulness. We'll get real and raw, talk about the light and the shadow side of self-care and mindfulness, and how we can actually stay centered amid the chaos and the hustle and bustle of our modern day world. So settle in and get centered. This podcast episode is brought to you by Centered in the City, a virtual on-demand self-care and mindfulness platform with different meditations, journaling prompts, nourishing recipes, and Pilates flows, all designed to support you feeling calm, focused, and energized as you live your life in this modern day world. For more information, head on over to centeredinthecity.com and claim your 7-day free trial. Welcome back to the Centered in the City podcast. I am so glad you are here. Today's podcast episode is super juicy. We get deep and explore the intimacies and intricacies of romantic relationships and partnership. Before I tell you about our guest, I want to invite you to join me on the Solstice Silent Meditation Retreat happening this June 21st to the 23rd on the beautiful Whidbey Island in Washington. This retreat is an opportunity to detox from technology, to detox from the crap that we feed our minds and our bodies, and instead really nourish ourselves from a place of clarity, from a place of connection, from a place of treating our mind and our body with a lot of love and kindness. On this retreat, you'll have an opportunity to experience a day of silence where we'll be practicing mindfulness all day through formal and informal practices so that you can really hear and feel your own mind, body, and needs. I can't wait to welcome you on this really luxurious and delicious retreat. So check out details in the show notes or head on over to centeredinthecity.com to learn more. Today's guest on the Center in the City podcast is Sierra Coleman, who is a licensed family and marriage therapist, as well as a certified sexologist. Sierra is an LGBTQIA+ ally, as well as works with sex-positive, kink-friendly practice, helping couples navigate open relationships as an ethically non-monogamous polyamory and non-traditional relationships. More of Sierra's bio is in the show notes. I wanted to have Sierra on the podcast because I think it's so important to not only talk about relationships, like the intricacies, the layers, the things that are happening behind closed doors that we don't really talk about. And one of the pillars of us practicing staying centered is being honest, is being transparent, and how we connect to our own personal needs and how we meet and connect with our partner's needs. I know you're going to learn so much from this episode, so let's settle in and let's get centered. Sierra, welcome to the Centered in the City podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Let's begin with, what does being centered mean to you?
I think being centered to me is really about being present. I find that anxiety lives in the future and depression lives in the past. And being present in my moment, practicing gratitude, allows me to really pay attention to what's happening around me. I really believe that if we allow ourselves to stay in the present, it allows a lot of freedom and happiness. And like you said, feeling a lot more centered in your life. And that can, you know, easily be said when things are going good, when things are a little more hectic in the present. I think practicing mindfulness really helps. Something that I've come to realize in life is that most things are temporary, which gives me pause and it gives me peace, because in the tougher moments, it gives me peace, knowing that eventually I'll get through it. But in the happier moments, it gives me pause and allows me to slow down a little bit more so I can appreciate all the goodness that I'm experiencing.
I love what you just shared around the peace and the pause practice. And I notice sometimes when things are good, I'm like, oh, my mind really wants to cling to this. It does not want to let go. So I love that invitation to just pause and savor and linger in the goodness of it, because that is also such a beautiful practice. When we practice staying centered, when we practice being in this present moment, like if we bring this into our relationships, what do you think is then possible when we can practice being more present in our relationships? Because we live in this world where, you know, couples are busy. People are navigating their careers. They're driven, ambitious, at least my listeners are. And technology is always in our way, in our faces. And so like, how do we even practice being present with each other?
So it's really interesting because I think that speaks to the evolution of relationships. And a lot of the times, if we think about the beginning of our relationships, we fall in love with somebody during a during a moment in life. So you're falling in love with them based on what's happening around them, the job that they have, the people they're interacting with, the responsibilities that they have. And for most people, we're falling in love and making those long-term commitments somewhere in our like 20s or 30s. And usually there aren't kids involved, you know, careers aren't as crazy, and there's a lot more opportunity to be present in our relationships because we just don't have as many responsibilities. So we look at it as like, oh, that was so easy. Things were so easy. You know, we had so much more time for dates. Our sex life was amazing. And as couples grow and change, and the one thing you can count on in life is change, are some of these aspects that were around you at one point in time, which fed into your relationship and being centered and being present, have shifted because now you own a house together. Now you have kids together. Now you have more responsibilities at work. And
the adulting is real.
Yeah, exactly. Like you are actually adulting. I always say your 20s aren't your early adulthood. I feel like they're your like older teens, essentially. And as we get older, we start to actually really adult. And all those things play a role in how present we are with ourselves and how present we are in our relationships. And I see a lot of times with the couples that I work with is like this clinging to the past of like, we had, you know, all this time together, our sex lives look like this, you know, why isn't like that anymore? And I'm like to them, what about your life is the same right now as it was 5 years ago, 2 years ago, you know, whatever it may be. And I was like, why do you expect, you know, the way that you guys communicate, the way that you guys engage with each other, what your intimate life looks like? Why do you expect that to be the same when so many other things are different? So kind of bringing that all back to your question, like, how do we stay centered in our relationship? And again, the way that I define being centered is about being present. It takes conscious effort and work. Relationships take work. They don't just say that for a reason. It's the truth.
Yeah. And I really like appreciate talking about this because I think we're fed, especially as women in this Western society, that like we're going to have our Prince Charming and you build your American dream home with the white picket fence and you have your partner and your dog and your kids and you just build this life and everything's like happy-go-lucky, especially if it's not modeled by your own parents or by the people in your environment. You don't know what working on your relationship looks like. And so then it can totally then just even like crumble because you're not feeding it. You're not keeping it up to date. You're not staying present with it as it evolves and grows because it's kind of its own like living organism.
It's so funny you say that because the analogy I always use is just because you bought the plant doesn't mean you have to stop watering it. And people think when they get married, like they're buying the plan, and then it just get, you know, get shoved into a closet because the kids become the priority, the job becomes the priority. Then you're so exhausted and so tired, and you feel like you have this marriage, which you have this commitment. And that's one of the most beautiful things about a relationship is the comfort and the safety that we feel in it. But it can also be the thing that dooms our relationship because we feel we have that comfort and that safety. And then we feel that we can ignore it because we have that and concentrate on all the other things that feel more important or feel like they need our attention because we have this marriage locked in.
I love that insight. And then we forget to water a plant and then it dies.
Exactly.
and takes more energy to revive.
Absolutely. And so I guess then the question becomes like, how do you continue watering the plant? And it is a conscious effort and it's intentional. You know, I always say with my clients, it's not rocket science, what I'm telling you or what I'm teaching you, but it's a lot of hard work because it's trying to bring again that conscious effort and intention into your relationship when you feel like everything else is more important, or if you don't attend to X, Y, or Z, then the sky is going to fall. And intentionality and communication are so important in maintaining a long-term relationship. And like you said, like based on what we had modeled for us, we all communicate very differently. And if we're not actively listening in a relationship, we're going to assign our own meaning, our own experiences, and our own assumptions to some of the words or actions that our partner is doing based on, you know, what we've experienced. And then
I'm so glad you're saying that right now, because, you know, even as mindful as I try to be in my life and every day, oh, my mind totally does that to my partner. And I create this whole other story based on what he shared or his facial expressions. And it's such a practice to just recognize that and grab hold of that story that wants to run wild and bring it back and learn how to even just like be centered amid that chaos that is the mind. The rub in relationships tend to be around finances, sex, and religion. Are typically mm-hmm. these categories. That's what I grew up hearing. Does that still feel resonant and true?
100%. I think intimacy, it's interesting because it's like the finances and intimacy are almost like the symptom of a bigger problem. It's really communication. That's it's like the diagnosis is communication. The symptoms are like arguments around these different topics. Because if we can find ways to communicate with each other about these issues, if we can find ways to hear each other, to actively listen, to show compassion, to show empathy, to have validation, then we can work towards compromise with each other. You know, there are couples who are just naturally more compatible with each other based on, again, how they grew up, what they value, what their needs are, what their interests are. And those couples still work at their relationship, but doesn't necessarily require as much. But then you have the couples who fell in love with each other, but they also have big differences in how they grew up and how they view certain things. And it doesn't mean that that relationship is doomed by any means. There's a love there. There is hopefully a respect there. And these issues can find, if you're open and willing to a compromise, that can happen, but it takes a very good communication.
Oh God, communication is so challenging because let me even step back. Like I heard this theory of, you know, I think there used to be this belief, or maybe still is out there, when we find our partner, like it's like, you complete me. We become 50%, 50%, we become whole. Where, as I remember hearing on a podcast like years and years ago, and it really changed my framework when thinking about relationships, was like we're each our own cup and we pour into a third cup, and that third cup is our relationship. Mm-hmm. And so we both have our own personal responsibilities to keep filling our own cups, you know, doing the things that light us up, being our individual people. But then we also have to take that intentional time and effort to fill this third cup, which is the relationship, as we said, like watering the plant. Would you agree with that analogy?
Absolutely. I mean, your partner should be part of your world, not your entire world. And we as individuals have our own responsibility to cultivate self-awareness, work on ourselves individually. I don't know if you're familiar with attachment theory. I'm not going to get too deep into the weeds with it, but attachment theory speaks to how we are products of our environment, that based on the way we are raised and the environment in which we're raised by our parents, we form one of four attachments: secure, avoidant, disorganized, and anxious. And ideally, you have a secure attachment that helps you find healthy, good relationships. The other three can all be worked on towards a secure relationship. But I bring this all up to say, if you find yourself in a relationship where one person has like an anxious attachment and one person has an avoidant attachment, which we see a lot of, because you have the anxious who is the pursuer and the avoidant who is the retreat. And so you have a constant chasing. It is the individual's responsibility in that relationship to work on their attachment. It is not up to each other to solve for that. Now, can there be more awareness around it and more kindness and grace and patience and maybe identifying certain triggers that your partner can be a little bit more aware of? 100%. But it's still up to that individual to do the work towards a more secure attachment for themselves.
Oh, I love that you're highlighting this. I have some anxious attachment style tendencies, and it has been a journey in self-soothing.
Yep.
And noticing when they arise and like meeting my inner child with those ouches and the stories of like abandonment or like, oh, they're mad at me. That must mean X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And to really meet myself with a lot of tenderness and compassion has been very transformational. And it ties back to this piece of around communication that you were sharing around, we probably are so filtered through our attachment styles and how we communicate and then how we interpret communication, right? How we hear and also how we speak, how we share, not just from language, but even body language or tone or presence. So I love this like permission for us as individuals to take care of our own shit. Love that personal responsibility. Yeah, because it's so important. And then as a couple, what are some ways that you can continue to water the places of connection and communication?
So I love that you brought that up, because there are so many different tools that I can give my couples to help them communicate better. There are different activities that I have them do to create spaces in which they can hear each other. But I think the first step in all of it is figuring out this kind of needs analysis of what isn't being met in the relationship. I am a firm believer that not one person can meet all your needs. It's an unrealistic expectation to put on a partner, and you're setting yourself up for sadness or failure if that's what you're looking for. Going back to your point of, you know, we need to fill our own cups and then we fill, you know, the relationship cup. But I do believe that we have probably like 2 to 3 like non-negotiable needs in a relationship. And those are the ones that I feel come up more or cause more conflict in a relationship when they're not being met. And so being able to identify like what are those like 2 to 4, let's say, needs, non-negotiables that each of you have, and in what ways are they not being met? And starting kind of at that base, just let's do a needs analysis. And then it's kind of digging into, well, where do those needs come from? And have these needs been met before in the relationship? Are these new needs? Because again, we shift as people, and you know, a lot of things that we value can stay the same, but sometimes our needs shift. And are we having those conversations as they shift? because a lot of the time people think that they signed this contract at the beginning of the relationship and agreed upon it, but marriage and relationships are a constant contract that need to be renegotiated every single day. So I really like to start just kind of gathering information from the couples, like what's working and what's not working. Let's talk about these needs and how have you guys gone about talking about them or communicating about them?
Oh my God, so much juiciness here. And it makes my heart so happy to like be able to have these conversations. And then when I think about, okay, if listeners are listening to this and it's like they feel empowered to meet their partner to talk about their needs, it's like, then what if they get activated? Because that so can happen when somebody hears like, my need of safety is not being met.
It is, right. It absolutely can be it's a very vulnerable conversation. And so it's about creating the space to have those vulnerable conversations. Going up to your partner, so often in relationships, we'll just go to our partner with something like, hey, I need to talk to you, or this blah, blah, blah happened. We don't ever like check in with a partner to be like, hey, is now a good time to have a conversation? Because we don't know what has happened in that day to that person, if they're in the mind to receive. And so I always like to start there, like ask your partner, are they in a space to have a in-depth or vulnerable conversation? And even before that, thinking about sitting down with your partner and talking about like, what does vulnerability look like? What does safety look like? And how can we create that environment to contain some of these really tough conversations? Because to your point, like, I love that you said that. I'm like trying not to talk too fast right now because I'm so excited about this. To your point, couples, again, going back to the, you know, active listening, they're going to assign their own meaning or assumptions, and a lot of times insecurities. So you come to your partner and you say like, you know, this need is not being met. Well, it's very different if you come to your partner and say, you don't do this, this, and this for me anymore, and you used to do this and X, Y, Z. It's a different conversation if you are saying, I'm feeling a little lonely in the relationship. I really miss spending time with you. Time, quality time to me looks like X, Y, and Z. And I feel like we have not done that in a long time. It's a very different conversation because, again, using the I statements is really important instead of the you statements, because you feels very, very blamey and like someone's pointing a finger at you. And slowing the conversation down, because it, again, we are going to assign our own insecurities or experiences or assumptions to the words that this messenger is sending to us. And I like to use Imago dialogue with my clients. I don't know if that's something you've ever heard of before.
Tell me more.
So it's about creating empathy and validation in the conversation. It's not about being right or wrong. It's not trying to prove a point. It's essentially just explaining how you feel and receiving that empathy and validation from your partner, even if they don't necessarily agree with it. It's just kindness. So it's set up as there's a messenger and there's a receiver, and then you switch roles, and the messenger sends a message to the receiver using those I statements and explains how they're feeling. And then the receiver will mirror back what it is that the messenger is saying based on their own understanding. And they'll say, I heard you say X, Y, and Z. Is that correct? And then the messenger will say, yes, that's correct. Or no, this is what I'm saying. So that way the person is hearing you very clearly that they're not responding to defend. They're not responding to be reactive. They are responding in that moment to be clear of what it is that you're being said. And if the message is received right, then the receiver will offer a message of empathy and validation. Like, I can understand why you feel like that. You know, you're right. We haven't spent a lot of time like that. I've been so caught up in work and I've really lost, you know, focus on us. I really miss being with you too. And I think this is a really good idea that we find some time together. And then you work towards a solution. Because a lot of the times when we're trying to communicate with our partners, we're only listening to respond. We're not listening to hear. And we're again, trying to, our ego just puffs on up in those conversations because what they could hear it based on their, you know, attachment wound, I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. Nothing I ever do is enough. Like, they don't love me. They don't care about me. And that's not what is actually being said. It's actually a bid for connection. That person is putting their arms out and asking them, like, come to me, like, let's fix this. Let's be better.
Oh my God. Again, so much juiciness. I'm like, yeah, I don't want this conversation to end. Okay. So if we kind of like tease this out, because sometimes it can be really hard to know what your needs are. Like, even when I work with my clients, recognizing I'm a human that has needs, like, what, you know, I just think I have thoughts and feelings and that's it. But it's like to really go that layer deeper to understand I have a need. I have a need to feel seen. I have a need for connection or safety. In the show notes, I'll link to a whole list of needs supported through nonviolent communication if those are interested in just looking at a worksheet to have a sense of what our needs could be is, I think, really helpful. And this is not something, communication and understanding our needs is not necessarily something that we're taught growing up. Mm-hmm. So it's like we're learning this whole new dialogue within our own selves. And then to be able to hear that with each other, and you just demonstrated in that dialogue of receiver and what
messenger.
Was the messenger mm-hmm. between the receiver and messenger, how it's practicing relational mindfulness just to be present and just hear the words that somebody's sharing without the, oh, what am I going to say next? Or what's mm-hmm. my rebuttal? Or how can I prove them wrong conversation? Or absolutely. How can I look smart?
How can I be right?
Yeah, exactly. How can I be right? And bring ourselves back to the present moment, like feel our body right here, feel the words, maybe notice if emotions start to rise or intensity starts to rise in the body, starts to get hot or tense. Like, can we breathe and be with those sensations and not get hooked by them?
Yeah, absolutely. I always say your emotions are valid. Your behavior is not. So when you're feeling, you're allowed to feel flooded. You're allowed to feel defensive. Can you communicate that? Can you say, hey, I'm starting to feel a little defensive. I'm receiving this really defensive. And your partner would be like, oh, okay. Can you explain that? And you work through it instead of actually being defensive.
Exactly. I love that reframe, so that there's permission so that we can feel, but yet also personal responsibility of how we respond or react.
Exactly.
I'm going to kind of take us in a right turn.
Okay. Let's do it.
So if like we're in a relationship for a while, or maybe not, maybe we're in this is a newer relationship, but intentionally designed this way. And we're recognizing, because something you said earlier is like, not one person can meet all of our needs. And I think that's really important to recognize. So that's why like having friends is really important. Having mm-hmm. a circle of people you can go to for different X, Y, and Z things. Like mm-hmm. I remember years ago before my husband and I were married, I thought he was supposed to be like my everything, like somebody who's going to help me with my mom grief, somebody who was going to be my romantic partner, somebody, you know, and it was a wake up call for me to realize, oh, I need to lean on other people in my circle for support. And when we're in monogamous relationships, what are some signs and signals that it also might be an opportunity to explore opening the relationship? Or like, how do you even explore? Because I know that's become a thing. And I don't know if that's even like politically correct to say a thing. But I've noticed that, you know, polyamorous relationships have become very prevalent and talked about and are open in our culture. And so I'm curious to hear more from your experience and your profession of like, how do people in relationships decide to open up their relationship? And what that can then create for a relationship or also not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm a big fan of this topic. I do work with and specialize with ethically non-monogamous couples and polyamorous couples. I think so being polyamorous or identifying in this way is an orientation, just like being bisexual or gay or queer. It is shifted and is actually an orientation. It is for a lot of people, and not all, but for a lot of people, this is who they are. This is a part of their DNA. And I think like a lot of in our history, people who did identify in the LGBTQIA plus community didn't necessarily practice or come out until much later in life because it wasn't something that was accepted or talked about. So I do believe, as you said, we're seeing a lot more of this. I think it's because there's been a cultural shift in our society where it is more acceptable and more talked about to live this kind of life. And the more people that are doing it and the more people that are talking about it, it normalizes it a little bit more. And so you see the shift of more people being curious about it and engaging it and trying to practice in it. I think the reasons for opening up a relationship are different for everybody. You have people who identify, you know, under this ethically non-monogamous umbrella early on. And so they just seek out those types of relationships versus those who are have been monogamous and then decide to open up their relationship. And I've seen a lot of people open up their relationship for the wrong reasons. And I've seen a lot of people open up their relationship for positive reasons. I think that if you are in a monogamous relationship, going to open it up, you should do so under the care of a therapist, because it is, as somebody who also, I am ethically non-monogamous, I identify within that lifestyle and as my orientation, and it can be one of the most beautifully complicated lifestyles. And if you're opening it up for the first time, there is a level of intimacy, honesty, and vulnerability that you have to get to with yourself and with your partner to navigate it in a successful way. And it is beautiful and well worthwhile, but not without its complications.
Thank you for highlighting that and sharing the layers around. And when you said that couples can open up their relationship for the wrong reasons, and then the kind of more skillful right reasons, like what are some of those in your experience that you've witnessed?
So if a couple's opening up their relationship because there's dysfunction in their relationship and they think that this could like save their marriage, you got to have a really solid foundation in your relationship to open up your relationship. So if that foundation is crumbling, then all it's going to do is lead you, you know, to other experiences and other people. And it's not necessarily going to, unless you're paying attention and mending that foundation at the same time, it's not going to work. You know, if you are like, let's open up our relationship and not working with a therapist to, you know, first cement that foundation, then it's going to be a rocky ride. And I've seen it. And you know, there are people who are really excited to go out and do it, that they feel like it is part of their orientation and it's something that they've wanted to do for a long time, but they didn't have the words or the know-how or even that it was an option for them. And so they want to do this, but there's trouble in their marriage and they go out to do it and they're so excited. Then you add in the NRE, new relationship energy, which has our neurotransmitters like dopamine, oxytocin, and serotonin firing off at crazy levels, it's very difficult to keep the foundation then together. So has it worked? I can't say like everyone fails when they do that. But in my experience with the couple that I've worked with who try to go and be open without work and there's issues within their marriage itself, it's very, very difficult.
I think highlighting that there needs to be a really solid foundation, that it's not an escape. Like this is not like a, I'm going to go over here, you're going to go over here, and that will make us more...
That'll bring us closer.
Sexually excited to be with each other.
And to be fair, I mean, it does. I mean, speaking in my own relationship, I know that the experiences that we have together and that we have outside each other, they enhance our one-on-one together sex life. I mean, it's fun. It's sexy. We love hearing about it. It definitely adds to our own, but you know, we also have a really strong foundation with each other. We do consistent check-ins with each other. We have boundaries. You know, I think a lot of people who aren't educated around this, around open relationships, feel like, or believe it's a free-for-all, that just because you're in an open relationship, that means that you can, that it's just all about sex and that you can have sex with anybody at any time, whenever you want. But that's not the case at all. There are boundaries within the relationships. There are numerous conversations about what feels good and what doesn't feel good. There are experiences that happen that teach you certain things, and they don't break you. You learn from them and you renegotiate, but it isn't just this like crazy, wild, like no consideration for the other person. It's very intentional.
Yeah. And I love the empowerment around staying in connection and communication around what feels good. What are the boundaries? Like that sense of there's clarity, and not to say I'm sure it doesn't get messy even within the clarity, because it's life, it's humans, it's mm-hmm. emotions. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like how can more, I know I'm kind of flip-flopping here, but like even bring, like, I feel like a lot of monogamous relationships, and this is not to even pigeonhole people, but I feel like a lot of monogamous relationships can tend to be more restricted and not communicating. I think there can be less of that. What do you like? What feels good? What would make you excited? Mm-hmm. There's more of kind of just like a default. And I don't know if I'm creating an assumption here, but just based off of even conversations I have with my clients around intimacy, it feels very much of a one narrow path mm-hmm. has been created in a lot of heterosexual couples.
Yeah. So I want to jump into that. But before, just I do want to clarify that under the ethically non-monogamous umbrella, there are various ways that people engage in this lifestyle. So like I said, I identify as ethically non-monogamous. So I have a primary partner, and that's how I function within this lifestyle, that I have a primary partner and we do things together and sometimes separately within the lifestyle. But I have it's more hierarchical. You have polyamorous people who that is like equal loves. So they have, you know, they could have numerous relationships and it's non-hierarchical. So there are a lot of like different terms under this ethically non-monogamous umbrella. And there are different ways. There's, you know, you have swingers who are, you know, they swingers only play with other couples. They'll never play separately. So there's a wide range under this umbrella. And I just wanted to clarify that, because as I was, you know, talking about my relationship, that's not how everyone's relationship is. If they are polyamorous or if they're ethically non-monogamous, it varies from couple to couple, and it's very and individual to individual. And it's very fluid, like sexuality, the relational status and how you identify in this lifestyle can be very fluid.
Thank you for identifying and clarifying, because yeah, it's like a whole new world that is expanding my mind of like what's out there, what's possible, and just even being conscious of what's the intentional lifestyle I want to be creating with my partner. You know, I think it's just a really healthy and helpful conversation to have.
So going back to, and I want to, you know, address your question about monogamy and how the conversations around sex are probably not as frequent, because it's not something that is, like I said, like I very much identify as ethically non-monogamous. It's very part of my identity and a big part of my life. So sex is a big part of my life. In monogamous relationships, sex can still very much be a big part of a couple's life. When you introduce like kids and more responsibilities with work and mortgages and all of that, I do see in monogamous relationships that sex gets sometimes, you know, pushed aside or put on the back burner. And a lot of that has to do with stress, especially for a woman. She's wearing the hat of housekeeper, cook, mom, chauffeur. She's working. And at the end of the day, she's exhausted. And, you know, someone comes home and they're like, oh, it's time for bed. Like, let's get intimate. And the woman's like, I'm just trying to survive. Like, I just like changed a diaper and now you want me to have sex. And so it's like having that shift is really, really, really difficult. And I don't think enough couples sit down and talk about their desires, if you will, or their pleasures. there's a great book called Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski that's called that talks about women's desire. But she just also came out with a new book. I forget what it's called. It's on my shelf behind me, but I'm blanking out of the name. We can link it later. It's about women's pleasure. And this could go for men as well. Like, I don't want to pigeonhole anyone into, you know, a place that they aren't. But for the most part, research has shown that men have a very linear experience when it comes to sex. So it's desire, arousal, orgasm, plateau. That's kind of their process. For women, it is like desire can bring on arousal, arousal can bring on desire, but like desire looks like, you know, having the house cleaned and kids picked up from school without having to be asked, right? It's more of like an emotional connection. And we separate these two things as like spontaneous desire and responsive desire. And men have more spontaneous desire, while women have more responsive desire. Now, women can have spontaneous desire and men can be more responsive, but research just shows that it's more men and spontaneous, women and responsive. And so taking the time to sit down with your partner and talk to them about, like, I am more responsive. I need more emotional connection. I can't just turn a leaf, you know, and want to be raring and ready to go. Like, you didn't call me today. You didn't tell me I looked beautiful. Like, you didn't help me clean up the dinner table. Like, these small acts go such a long way of creating intimacy. And being able to create more emotional bids of connection towards each other throughout a day can go so far in creating connection and then being able to engage more intimately at a later date. But it's also about carving out the time to do that. When this goes back to watering the plant and needs, is if we're not creating the time and space and environment that is going to help create that desire, then it's not going to happen. And I think with monogamous relationships, sex is something that is quote unquote supposed to happen, but doesn't really get talked about. They don't talk about the fantasies that they have with one another or for themselves, because there's probably shame around it. We have a lot of shame around sexuality, even though it is part of most of the things that we do and see in life. And there's a fear of what our partner will think of us, about what they're going to say, instead of an openness and a trust. And it can go so far if you allow yourselves to have some of these conversations and open yourselves up to trying new things or having different ways of communicating with each other around it, so you can bring more of that intimacy and fun and playfulness into the marriage.
Oh, you just shared so much wisdom here. And I literally could keep talking to you about all of these levels. So we'll have to have you back on the podcast, because there's so much juiciness in being able, kind of tapping back into like understanding our needs and being able to be present and being able to communicate them to our partner and being able to experiment. And then to your point about stress, like stress is
the biggest boner killer of them all.
Yeah, destroying our world in all ways. And that's one of my passions for like why I do the work that I do, because it not only creates inflammation and harm within our own bodies and minds, but it puts the pressure on relationships and it puts the pressure between humans and destroying our world and environment. Anyway, I could go on.
Yeah.
so like how we even can like navigate creating those intimate moments amid the stress and learn to kind of work with it, I think it could be another helpful area that we go into.
I mean, it's interesting because we are so resistant to creating the time because we don't feel like we have it. But once we do, because we're so stressed, but if we create the time and then allow ourselves to be present in that time and give into the playfulness and the connection, going back to our cup, it fills our cup and it helps take away the stress. And it's almost like this, like, well, I'm too stressed to do it, but if you did it, it would help with the stress.
Yes. And even just the practice of being present, like you can use sex as a mindfulness practice, like to practice being present with it instead of the mind wandering to the list of to-dos and
exactly.
the needing da 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 da, which of course is like going to take you out of the mood, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's such a boner bust to use your
stress. I love it. Yeah, no, stress and pressure are the biggest boner killers of them all. Like, who wants to have sex if they feel like they pressure to have sex or they're super, super stressed out? And so it's about understanding, like, what is creating in that environment? What is the environment that you need? How can you talk about it? How can you both make changes and give to it?
Oh, I love it. Sierra, where can people learn more about you and your practice and even maybe like resources around, you drop some, so we'll add those in the show notes around pleasure.
Absolutely. So you can find me at havencouplestherapymaryland.com. You can also look me up on Psychology Today under Sierra Coleman. I will definitely send you some additional links to some great books around just women's pleasure, women's desire, around nonviolent communication, and even some a script about how to do that imago dialogue.
I love it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Wade. This was wonderful. I really, really appreciate you having me.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I don't know about you, but this conversation was so heart-opening because I think we don't really get into the nitty-gritties of relationships and what happens behind closed doors enough. We tend to live in a culture and a society where we just want to see the shiny parts, the happy-go-lucky, the perfect marriages. But relationships are messy, they're complicated, they're layered. And I love how Sierra really walked us through the root of all of our troubles and rubs really come down to communication and how communication can really enhance our level of intimacy and vulnerability and stress. So I welcome you to just allow whatever you listen to simmer and think about what's one tiny action step you can take this next week that supports you building more intimacy in your relationship, even if it's your relationship with yourself. How can you create more of that honest place of connection within self and within others? Feel free to share with me what comes up for you on Instagram at @onewade. You can write me a message or reach out to me in the contact form in the show notes. Until next time, stay centered.